Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the May 24 edition of Commodity Week. So farmers around the nation have planted corn at a rapid pace, a record pace, and still the commodity markets are not convinced. We'll talk more about the price of corn later in this edition of Commodity.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today in studio include Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Aaron Curtis. He's with Midco from Bloomington, Illinois. On the phone line in the second half hour of the program, we'll talk with ag economist from Iowa State, Chad Hart. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
A couple of notes up front in this program. It was recorded on Thursday, the 23rd day of May, because, well, I want to go on vacation as we head into the Memorial Day weekend. I'll be off on Friday and on Tuesday for the closing market report. So just as a reminder, as you make your way through the Commodity Week program, this was recorded on a Thursday afternoon. Let's start off with this question, gentlemen. Corn planting this week was the largest ever for 1 week at 43%. 71% complete now across the nation. Here's some numbers that are pretty interesting. In Illinois, 74% of the corn crop was in the ground as of the 19th day of May. It was a one-week increase of 57%. Iowa, at 71% complete, a one-week increase of 56%. And Minnesota, the other place that really put corn in the ground this past week, at 52% on their one-week increase. And with that, the market still managed to go higher. Most people are scratching their head as to the reasons why. Aaron Curtis, do you have any good reasons?
Well, not too many, I guess. It's been kind of a strange week. I think we did see this corn kind of bounce off that 512 area, which has been kind of down there in the lower end of the range on some short covering. I think as we move on here, we are noticing that emergence continues to be behind the the average. I think that's something the market is kind of watching here as we move forward, considering the plant. The traders mostly considering the trade or the corn planting is pretty much behind us at this point. So we watch emergence and then, of course, what the weather looks like here through the summer. I think we're going to continue to find a little support down here in the low $5 area on Dease corn until we know a little bit more about the summer growing conditions, and that's going to be a little while at this point. So I think we're going to continue to be on the range-bound side, finding support on the lower end of the range, finding resistance at the top end of the range, and kind of wait and see what the summer weather holds for us.
Chip Nellinger, I suppose most people thought we're at 71%. That's it. It's all done, and that wasn't the case.
Yeah, and I did as well, really. I was a little bit surprised we held so well on Tuesday, but I think the market's done a good job of looking out a week to 10 days ahead of us and kind of getting it right. You mentioned those numbers. We caught up a huge amount of acreage was planted in 1 week, but still we had quite a few rain days, the middle part of this week. We still have 12 to 15 million acres of corn to plant coming into the last week in May. So I think the market's still a little bit nervous that, you know, hey, we did make up a lot of room in a short amount of time, but there's still a lot of rain in the forecast and a lot of acres to plant. So I think the market's done a pretty good job of, looking out ahead of us and factoring that in. So I think a key, and I've said this, unfortunately, for about the last five, into the weeks in a row, but next Tuesday, we've got a long weekend here with no markets on Monday. Tuesday could be interesting depending on how that long-term forecast looks. And are we getting warmer, drier weather to get corn planting finished? Or are we still fighting wet weather, especially in that northern tier of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, maybe one of the numbers we should take a look at, as Aaron mentioned earlier, is the eMERGE number, although it might jump by the time we get to Tuesday of next week when that next crop progress report comes out. Still, it lags 27% behind the five-year average at this time.
It does. And as you mentioned, I've talked to many producers and just amazed with the warm weather we've had and some rain. You know, this corn's popping out of the ground in 4 or 5 days. So we're going to catch up on that in a hurry as well. And probably more likely than not, the real answer is going to be what comes, June, July, August. How is Mother Nature going to treat us? Are we going to get continual rains, stay out of that hot, temperature pattern that we were in last year? If so, that can heal a lot of the problems we're facing right now. So that eMERGE number, I think, will catch up pretty quickly, just due to the weather that we've had and the conditions. Those that huge record pace went in pretty good conditions with some rain after it on most of those acres.
There was a magical date, supposedly, I guess, of May the 20th, which has come and gone, and I guess the trade is now worried about the 8% lag on planting, that is, on the five-year average, which is normally 79% as of last Monday. And, of course, it was 71% this time around. It sounds a little shaky to me as a way to feed the bull. Are there other fundamental factors that we should consider on the positive side?
Well, I think we're seeing, at least around central Illinois anyway, we're seeing basis firm up a little bit on the old crop. So we're seeing some concern about some tightness. Again, I think more of a lack of any real producer movement than anything. We're seeing cash bids approach that $7 area again. So I think producer needs to be paying attention here a little bit as we move through the next couple weeks. But things just aren't moving too much as far as cash, so that continues to offer a little support. Beans, on the other hand, are a little bit different animal to get into. But at least on the corn side, I think the lack of cash movement kind of supporting at least that front month contract, which is the July at this point.
What are your expectations as we make our way, speaking of the front month and the old crop as opposed to new crop for corn, over the June, July, August, and even September? It seems like a long way from now until harvest.
It does, and I think a couple things we got to watch, of course, is the southern crop. A lot of corn moved north last fall and kind of bridged the gap here, of course, with some of the drought problems we had in the Midwest. We got to watch that. Watch supplies in the north to see if we continue to see some corn in the northern states continue to move south to cover some of these tighter situations we got in this central Illinois area. And the other thing to watch here as we move forward, of course, is how the weather cooperates. If we're going to have some early harvest. At this point, it looks like it's going to be delayed into that mid-September, late September time frame. And then we look at, what kind of crop's going to come in from South America. The second crop of Brazil corn looks to be pretty good. So I think as we move into the latter parts of the month, latter parts of the summer, we're going to see a little more of that corn moving up and offloaded in the south, and then how far up north does some of that work. But that's going to help alleviate a little bit of the tightness here as we move through the summer.
It might be important to remind folks of how much corn USDA says is actually still going to be on the hand at the end of the marketing year. They're up how big now?
Well, they are on last number or last count, I believe it was up towards 750, if I'm not mistaken, just a touch over. We had that surprise quarterly stocks number in March that I'm not sure is fully reflected yet in this carryover, so there's still some reconciling to do there and some questions on feed usage. So it's still relatively tight. And as Aaron mentioned, I think a lot of what's holding us up or giving us some support is the old crop. And so both on corn and beans, demand's been very good. We had confirmation this past week. China purchased some old crop, unknown old crop corn, and they confirmed China on new crop. They've been buying new crop beans for quite a while. And so demand is good on corn and beans. And anytime China's in the market, it helps give us a floor underneath the market. But, there's a lot of transition to go here, like you mentioned, between this tight old crop and what happens on new crop. So there still could be a tremendous amount of volatility ahead of us over the next 5 to 7 months as we kind of figure out how this new crop is going to pan out and what size crop we're looking at.
Yeah, so I want to deal with that just a bit more because we have some time frame in there, that August-September time when normally we would use the crop that comes out of the Mid-South. It's 3 weeks behind schedule. So let's put ourselves to the first week of September and say we have 3 weeks that we have to pull out of old crop supplies. How does that change things?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch, especially on the basis side, and that's where things can get interesting. And we've seen a little bit of that on beans here this last week, where things can get pretty volatile. And processors like Decatur, or whatever, try to bridge these gaps here as we get to September and try to get from old crop to new crop here. And that's where things can get interesting. But I think we got to be mindful of the fact that these processors can find alternative ways to get corn, and it doesn't mean that they need to pay up basis-wise late summer for corn in central Illinois. There are ways to continue to move corn from the north to the south, like you mentioned, southern Midwest corn. We'll see how far along that goes. But I think there is going to be an interesting dynamics here as we move forward, and I think it's going to be something that's going to probably change on a week-by-week nature, depending on what goes on. You can't rule out also some downtime being taken, too, to kind of bridge that gap. And we do see some isolated incidents in ethanol plants, too, sometimes, where we do see some downtime until more redible corn quantities can get found.
Aaron's mentioned soybeans a couple of times. On the 19th day of May, USDA reported that 42% of the crop had been planted. Last week, we sowed just 24% of the crop. Kind of an interesting number. Iowa, the real laggard there, they were 16% planted as of the 19th day of May, and normally on the five-year average, they're 59% planted by that date.
Yeah, some interesting things going on in beans. Obviously, we're behind pace, but I think there's a lot of confusion and maybe even arguments about trying to figure out what the effects of late planted corn are to yields. There's even more of an argument on beans. And so this wet weather, at least in the short run, I see is a bit of a negative for new crop beans. You know, the Dakotas are way, way behind. I should say North Dakota. Those areas in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota have received a lot of rain over the last week. And talked to some producers down in that Mid-South area. They've kind of run out of the window for corn planting. They switched to cotton. They've gotten a lot of rain. They're almost out of the window there, and they're switching over to beans. And so I'm afraid from cotton and maybe some corn acres up north that we could stand to pick up a fairly significant amount of bean acres if we're not careful here. And, the debate's going to be on as far as what does late planting mean to yield. But to me, it looks like we could easily stand to pick up some bean acres here over the next 2-3 weeks.
Let's switch to wheat at the moment. Landwirth this week suggested USDA's global wheat production figure was too heavy. The Chicago-based firm dropped production by 1%. Now, that sounds a whole lot better than 7 million metric tons that you could read. So let's roll this prospect for U.S. wheat production. Is it better or worse today than it was in early May?
Well, I think that's a pretty tough question to answer just because wheat yields are pretty hard to decipher this time of year. But I think our elevator customers in southern Illinois are still anticipating a pretty decent crop at this point. Of course, they would like a little turn to some warmer, drier weather. I think that would be most advantageous at this point to kind of finish off this wheat crop as it heads into the heading stage at this point. So it looks like we do have some warmer weather coming next week, and that's going to be pretty ideal here to kind of help get this wheat crop up and going. But at this point, I think we still have some potential for some pretty decent crops.
Soft red winter wheat crop in good condition. The hard red winter in the plains in much tougher conditions, though, and that might play into some acreage shifts as well.
It is, and you talk to producers out there, they're really scratching their head. We've had a big slide in wheat prices, and yet from Texas, Oklahoma into Kansas, just scratching their head. They've had so many problems, four freezes. You name the problem, and they've had it out there. And so they're scratching their head saying, hey, we have a poor crop coming, and wheat's done nothing but slide. So I guess to answer your question, depends on where you're at in the country, you know, as to what your prospects are or your thoughts are for wheat here. I've been a little perplexed about wheat in the long run as well. Due to those problems out west, we haven't got much play out of that, and I think it's been in the market's mind, we do have this bigger supply coming in other areas of the world, and so but it's not certain. It's, you know, a lot of crops are growing right now, not in the bin yet, and there's some things that could go wrong in many areas of the world yet, so it remains to be seen. I think the funds are getting a little overdone on the short side, so easy to see a short covering bounce with any type of a spark at all.
Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. He's joined in studio by Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. In just 2 minutes, we should return when we'll talk with Chad Hart of Iowa State. He is an ag economist there. This is the May 24 edition of Commodity Week. As a reminder, I'm taking a vacation day on Friday, so it's actually recorded on Thursday, the 23rd. On the phone line with us today is Chad Hart. He's an ag economist at Iowa State. Our panelists in studio include Aaron Curtis of Midco and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Chad, thank you so much for taking some time with us. Your state made some real strides forward in corn planting over the last week, and then some rainfall came and slowed things down. But I'm more interested in the lack of soybean planting that has happened there. Can you give me some good reasons why?
Well, in this case, it all goes back to that corn planting. Given how far behind we were on the corn planting side, as soon as we saw a window of opportunity, Iowa farmers went in and planted just about as much corn as they possibly could, and that meant we sort of did neglect soybeans. I mean, we did plant 15% of our expected crop, but that's a long ways behind where we normally are at this time of year.
Chad, on old crop corn, how tight do you think things are in Iowa, and how much corn, you know, just a ballpark, do you think the producer is still setting on old crop-wise?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, as you're looking right now, we're definitely sitting on a fair amount of old crop corn. How much to say? Not sure I've got a good hard number there. But as we look at it, I think we are starting to see signs of that old crop starting to move through the countryside. We've had fairly strong positive basis here in Iowa for quite some time. You're looking at average of still $7 old crop corn on the board here as you look at Iowa. And I think a lot of producers are saying, you know what, that looks attractive. I know I want to get my bins cleared out because of the potential for still what could grow out of the 2013 crop here. And so I think we're beginning to see some of that crop starting to move through the market.
Chad, I'm going to really put you on the spot here. What do you think, looking out here for the new crop, what are your expectations on crop size given what we know today, and even, you know, maybe the demand side as you look out here over the next year?
Okay, well, I'll tell you how I definitely differ from USDA. You know, as you're looking right now, I guess I came into this crop year thinking, even before we had the planting problems, that we were going to see below trend line yields just because of what the drought did to us last year and how it drained soil moisture, especially as you look at the western side of the Corn Belt. That's still, I think, an issue here. On the corn side, I'm guessing, you know, and in this case it is a guess, I'm going to put it that way, corn yields in the upper 140s. I would plug in a number of 148, which is about 10 bushels below where USDA is at right now. So that puts us in the 13 billion bushel corn range, which, you know, is still record levels, but I think a lot easier for this market to handle than the 14 billion bushel being projected right now. As I look at the demand side, I am not as bullish as USDA is on the feed demand side, but I do think we could see stronger rebounds as I look at ethanol, and I'm watching exports real closely right now. We're seeing China be much more active in the corn market than I expected this early in the season.
Can you convince me that a 148 is possible on the low side, I guess, given the conditions that are on the ground to the west of Interstate 35?
Yeah, I can give that to you, and the best way I can describe it is this. If you look at the year, the years that line up well with the planting progress we've had, sort of the analog years to this, they would be basically 83, 84, 93, and 95. Three of those 4 years were definitely below trend line yields, in most cases by over 10%. By looking at that 148, I'm assuming about a 10% yield hit. And so based upon the planting progress, it's lining up really well. When you look at the weather analog here, most of the climatologists I've talked to seem to be pointing towards 1947 as at least so far the best analog year we've got there. You look back at the history, create trend yields back then, you see that same 10% hit there. And so that's how I'm getting to that 148. So far, the patterns seem to be lining up with a good 10% hit below trend line yield.
Chad, overall, I don't know if you would agree or not, but the our feeling is the producer has been a very light seller of new crop corn to this point. Do you think that changes anytime soon? And what do you think the producer's game plan here as we move through the summer and watch corn emergence here?
Well, I would agree. I think producers have been fairly light new crop sellers moving forward. I think it's a case of they wanted to make sure that, if you will, the drought and the ramifications from it do clear this market. You know, I think they were looking at a market that, just as we saw today in the markets, you can spike up in a hurry, but they also know that they can run down in a hurry if, for example, the USDA yields come to pass. And so as I look over the next couple of months, this is where I'm thinking that, you know, we'll see producers hang on for a little while, sort of like they're doing with their old crop right now, but they're going to make a move before they think the market fully takes into effect where this crop's going to go once we finally figure it out. And what I mean by that is by the time we get to July, we'll know whether we're going to see a rough yield year out there for corn and soybeans or not. And so that'll give them a little time to move before the markets, you know, fully move on that realized yield.
Chad, any thoughts on beans here, kind of big picture like we talked about going forward into the new crop perspective?
As I'm looking at new crop on the bean side, on the interesting things for me is USDA is showing, you know, the demand hit we took last year from the drought wasn't all that large, and they're showing a fairly sizable rebound as we look out there, both domestically on the crush side and on the export side. But they have a very low season average price estimate out there for 2013. I think, you know, and actually the futures market is holding this up as well, that now that bean market looks better than what USDA is talking about in terms of holding prices up here. And I think, the story here may be that export line to watch again. We continue to see China churn through beans, whether it's our beans or South American beans, and that demand for soybeans hasn't backed off yet in will likely hold prices better than what USDA is expecting right now.
Can I take you back to the corn? Can you tell me about the consumption pattern you see in the 2013-14 marketing year?
Sure. What I'm looking at here is, I mean, I do think we will see some feed demand build back up, but not to the levels that USDA's got on their books right now. You know, they're saying we'll move from 4.4 billion bushels in the 2012 marketing year up to 5.3, and that's quite a sizable return there. I don't see the animals to pull that off right now, but what I do see is that ethanol, they're going from 4.6 to 4.85 billion bushels. I think we could get that a lot closer to 5 by the time it's all said and done out of the 2013 crop year. That one's highly dependent upon gasoline consumption, though, as I look. Right now, margins are better. We're seeing some plants in there, but also in talking with some plant managers, they are worried about having to slow down again a couple of months from now, basically right before we get to harvest. And then the other one's exports. Exports have been incredibly slow through the 2012 marketing year. As I'm looking in the 13 right now, what I'm, again, seeing fairly steady new crop demand building up there. And like I say, China's been leading a lot of that charge, which has been the interesting part of looking at that data.
Chad, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you very much.
Chad Hart is an ag economist at Iowa State. Time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Aaron Curtis from Midco.
I think you got to continue to watch old crop supplies here if you're still holding on to some old crop corn and soybeans. Continue to look at what the market's telling you, not only with the inverted market, but some of the basis levels that we're seeing. So continue to look at some of these bounces in here to continue to get things moved.
And Chip Nellinger?
Well, I think Aaron touched on this earlier. Most elevators you talk to have the least amount of new crop corn and beans bought from farmers in history. We've talked a lot about some of the bullish aspects, some of the bearish aspects. If we are in the process of making that transition from tight stocks to growing and building stocks on corn and beans, it does not support $6 corn and $13 beans. And so use that tightness in old crop and the bounces and volatility that we see to take action, protect yourself in some way, whether that's sales with calls attached or puts or some way lock that revenue in, because the transition, when it comes, and we know it will eventually with a big crop, that transition will be really ugly and hard to get through when it does come.
Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing and Aaron Curtis from Midco. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.